Welcome back again to Risking Failure. We are so glad you're here this week again. We must be up to episode 30-something. I am absolutely stoked with, well, made it this far. I can't say a surprise. I always thought we would. But I'm just happy to be here, and I'm happy you're here with us, listening in and tuning in. And I'm pleased to be with my good friend, Mr. Mark Dobson.
I can't believe we've made it like 32 episodes. I didn't think our relationship was going to be that was strong enough, Mick.
I agree. I'm pretty impressed. We've stuck it out, mate. We're finding a little bit of rhythm here and there. Every now and then we have a good one.
It is. It's the weeks I take Prozac. All the medication is just helping. And they're like, maybe you need to make some changes in your life, Mark, if you're having so much grief and misery. No, it's okay. It's okay. I can keep doing it. Sniffing salts before I get on air. Ready to go.
That's good.
So, satellite link up. Okay, go. You got a question for me, Mick?
I do, mate. I've got one. Go. What's the worst thing that you've ever that when you were in your school days that you ever had? Did you ever have detention for anything? What was the worst thing you did at school?
Oh no, I'm not prepared to say the worst things I did at school. Oh no, you're just talking about the ones I got caught doing. Okay,
so discipline at school. Do you ever have to do detention?
Oh, a handful of times. I was pretty good, but I guess the easy one was, or the dumbest one was, when I went to England. I went to school for a term in England as a kid in Year 9, and in the first week,
I'm already laughing. This
I discovered that I had. A teacher that was related to Satan and for maths, and I'd forgotten to do my homework. I just legitimately forgotten. I was in the first 4 days or something. So I panicked right before class and I copied a kid and I copied the dumb kid. And she just called us both in after. She said, one of you copied from the other. Who was it? Our answers were identical and they're both incredibly wrong. I can't believe it. So I got detention. My first 4 days at a new school. I've never had detention in my life. So I felt like such a tool. I had to explain to my parents. They didn't care. They knew I wasn't a bad kid. But yeah, so that was that. Yeah. So anyway, what about you? What did you do? What have you? Did you do something really bad?
No, I didn't. I had a pretty good school. I was a bit of a goody two shoes, really. But I did have one detention. And well, my dad used to run a company that was involved in point of sale machines, like cash registers and FPOS machines that swipe credit cards and all that kind of stuff. And he got this free watch from Casio, and it had a remote controller that you could program into it. And it had a little booklet where you could program all these little TV codes to control all these different manufacturers. And so I had it on in the classroom when we were watching a movie, and everyone knew, and they were all like, oh, you got to change the channel. And I just didn't have the guts to. So this other, like the real bad kid, he was like, I'll give it to me. I'll do it. So he was like pausing it, and then the teacher would get up. And it was one of those like replacement teachers, because the teacher was sick. So it was like the guy had no idea who the classroom was.
Right.
It was like everybody was just crying with laughter for the poor teacher. Was like, you know, we were telling him to blow into the video player. There was something wrong with that. Oh, yeah. You know, just the whole 45 minutes, just the poor guy. So I ended up finding out, and it went all the way to the whatever, I think the year level coordinator. I got attention. But I actually didn't even show up. I don't know why. I didn't even go, and they never even asked me. But that was my only detention. But I was pretty good at school. So
half a life is just showing up.
So, hey, that was good news this week.
Sorry, I'm just back a second. That was cool. I want one of those watches, and I didn't know that existed. And somebody should tell Google, because I don't think they're making that stuff. So we need one. Big week for both of us, huh?
Yeah. I launched my podcast this week. Well, it's sort of in launching mode, meaning like I submitted it to iTunes. So I think it's going to be live in the next day or so. Pretty exciting.
Right. So when you say you submitted it, who'd you submit it to? iTunes? Do they have to give it a thumbs up?
Yep. So
Does somebody listen to it or something?
I think so.
Isn't this interesting that we've got a podcast and we don't know?
Well, I don't know to the extent of that, but here's what I can tell you is And we decided, by the way, for listeners, that we're both working on very similar projects in this way. And we've been talking off air for quite a bit on different strategies and ideas. And we just thought maybe this week we'd do recaps on what we've been working on and allow other people to listen into that too. So it's a bit of a different week. But so what happens is you start a website, can be anywhere really. Ours, Risking Failure, and my website for SustainerCast, you can check it out at sustainercast.com, is on a WordPress site. So it's a free WordPress theme that you can select. And, you know, there's got a particular type of theme that I've used. So you begin to populate that, and that's a different learning curve on its own. But you also host your audio episodes at a hosting site. And that is actually, your website points to that, or it pulls in those episodes and hosts them on your website. And it designates what they call an RSS feed that's for a podcast. And you submit that feed link to iTunes. And basically what that means is that iTunes is constantly looking at your website. And when something changes, the feed notifies iTunes, and iTunes just automatically pulls in your next episode, but it won't pull in like a blog entry because that's a different feed. There's sort of some mechanics to set it up. And if anyone's ever interested in that, the way I've kind of followed launching my project and this one at Risking Failure is from a guy named Pat Flynn that has a really great tutorial on his website on how to launch a podcast from start to finish. And it's not as difficult as you'd think.
Yeah, well, I actually haven't gone on that journey yet. What I did yesterday was I recorded the first interview for my new podcast. So a bit of a backstory for everyone is that when Mick and I started to do this, we were just taking a risk. We're like, how we do this? Let's see what happens. We never really tried to build a significant audience base or had grandeurs of fame or anything. We were just doing this because it was a risk. It was interesting. It was challenging. It seemed like a contribution to the people that would be listening and a bit of a legacy as well. So that's how that played out. So now what we're doing is we're actually going to go, we're doing these other podcasts with this knowledge now, like with ones that would probably be more of a commercial agenda now. So when I did the interview yesterday, I did the interview, but I haven't done any of the preliminary work that you've done. Like, I don't actually understand all the stuff that you're talking about. I don't understand. I understand what you're saying, but I haven't gone and done it all. You've got the hands-on experience. So there's definitely two elements to this whole project. There's been the mechanical, how do you actually get it up and make sure that when we email all our listeners that they get it. And then there's the, you know, what do you actually say on air and how do you actually create the opportunity to have an interview with somebody who's really interesting and fascinating? And then when you do interview them, is it interesting and do people like it? And so I just did one yesterday. It was the first one. And Mick listened back to that. It's a really crazy, fun journey. And there's risks everywhere. Like, there's these challenges everywhere. Like, one of the things that, for example, the listener may not appreciate is when you sit down to interview someone, you have to set up your recording equipment. And you go from being – you go. So you understand, right? Mick gets it straight away. You go from being – oh, I'm, you know, Mick Dunn, managing director of this, you know, multi-million dollar company, and I'm Mark Dobson, you know, coach to the elites, to the, hang on, let me just plug this in, and your whole street cred goes out the window, and you test in, yeah. And then you're like, all right, let's start, and there's this real awkward contrived moment, and you're like, so there's a lot of skill to be able to slide into a room, press record, have everybody comfortable, yeah, and have it just flow out naturally. So there's these obstacles and awkward moments everywhere. Because you had a complete, well, not balls up, but your first one was pretty tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because I stepped out of what we were doing. We do our podcast in a very controlled environment. We're both in quiet rooms. We have plenty of time to set up and get our audio right and levels and test everything. And okay, hit record, you know. And then even for us, I mean, just today when we were recording, there's still like moments of like me trying to get going and you going, getting, you know, like it's like going from to start is always a difficult thing, I think. I found this in my first interview. What happened, had this grand vision that I would hit record and we would just sort of ease into the conversation. And that's exactly what happened. And we got like 10 minutes in and I was like, I hadn't introduced this person. I hadn't like any of that. So I had to like backpedal and figure out how am I going to make this relevant. And there was like this 10 to 15 minute period when like my brain was focused on pulling things in. And then, so then the conversation thread gets lost a little more. I'm not able to, you know, really listen. And I think I'm still going to be a few episodes away from with complete strangers getting to the point where I'm like really able to listen. And I know that sounds completely stupid because you would think that it's somebody that you're best friends with that you would have that biggest risk with. But I think with somebody that you don't know, there's constantly a lot of crap going on through your brain on like, what am I going to say next? Oh my goodness, they're coming to the end of this thought pattern and I don't have an effing question. Like I've got nothing. There's nothing here. Or,
but I acknowledge though, if I'm bored, then the listener must be bored too. So then you go, oh no, need to do something interesting. And then you say something dumb and you sound like a dick. And then you say something. And, you know, for me, I always throw in some humor. And then obviously sometimes that just is a foot and mouth experience where, you know, I've listened back to some of the stuff I've said. I'm like cringing out. Oh, Mark, why did you say
and
that?
Then, like, but when you're talking, like when you're actually saying an idea, and I heard you do it even in your first episode, and we've done it together here on the show too, where you're talking and you're like delivering this idea and then all of a sudden, like you can't remember what you're saying anymore. And then you're like, ah, I forgot. I've lost my train of thought.
Well, you know what happened with when I interviewed Pete yesterday? And so, Mick, sorry to listen to this, but there's a period where I actually say that on air. I go, look, I lost my train of thought. What was happening is Pete got a text and was reading his text. So, I had to keep talking until he'd finished doing his text. So, I'd lost my way. And in the end, I said, oh, look, I'm not really sure I am anymore. And then he came in and said something that, you know, all this stuff's going on. So, it's quite a landmine. But I think that the larger landmine is, for me, has been working out what is this podcast about? What is the decision-making process that says, yes, this is who I would interview or this is a conversation I would have and this is not a conversation I would have? So, we actually recorded the very first discussions trying to work that out for this podcast. Mick just, of his own initiative, said, you know, we should record this because it might be a day that they're valuable. And what we took a long time and we've got them recorded somewhere. We were discussing, you know, what is this about? And we eventually got to the point of that it was honest conversations around growth. It was very difficult to get that clarity. And
I know it seems probably so obvious. It's not like this is some monumental game-changing brand or anything. So sometimes, like, it seems like for us, I felt like we were just, like, dicking around for way too long. But it became very important because we couldn't move forward without that.
So, this is what we talked about in one of those other episodes about the, you know, moving action versus contemplation or something. I don't remember what we called it. But
we did, yeah.
Yeah. So, you've got to, like, I get grief from people going, you know, you don't worry about that too much. You've got to do this. I'm like, you don't know what you are talking about. Because if I start a project and it's a couple of degrees in the wrong direction, it stuffs you massively later. And I really want to get that direction right. I don't want to overthink it. Which is, and overthinking it is when you really keep coming back to the same one or two things, like you're just changing a comma or the for the word art or something like that. But essentially, you get it right. So, when I started the one yesterday, I opened with the new podcast that is going to be called Life Slipping By with a subtext of Living the Brave Life. Now, when I pitched that to Pete, you heard it on air, Mick. I pitched it to Pete and the first thing I said is Life Slipping By. I was like, is that negative? He goes, yeah, I think it is. I think you should use I like that other line, life, you know, living the brave life. So this, I committed, got it going, and then we sort of refined a little bit.
Both talked about, there's a couple of things that I think are worth talking about. And that's like how we workshopped that, like finding what it was about. Because we've sort of talked about this in terms of our own human endeavors. Like we did that episode on, you know, purpose, but specific to a project like this, I think we've both gone about it in similar but different ways. So it'd be interesting to talk about that a little bit. And then, I've lost my
track. I was going to say, and then what? I was like, and then what? Why don't we just do that? It's poetry, Mick. So
I was worried about doing this too. I got out a pen and paper. So let's go.
With that, there's, I'm always looking for that thing that only I can deliver. Meaning, where Christmas, like my mum creates, she cooks the Christmas pudding. And it's a recipe handed down from her mum. And Other people could probably duplicate that at some point, but Mum just gets it. She can just, the night before, she can just wing it. And even if, oh, there's not enough carrot this year, but it doesn't matter, we can do this. Or like, it's amazing, right? She just gets it. She delivers that. Now, if she doesn't cook that, no one else brings it. And my Auntie Judy, she always brings a jelly slice. And everyone loves it. My Auntie's jelly slice. She's the one that delivers that. And I think on the planet, we've all got something that we deliver. So I'm always looking for what that is. What is it, the one thing that I can deliver that nobody else ever could? And they might be able to do it in variations of it, but essentially it's me. I do it naturally. And then off the back of that, I'm looking for what is the problem that I'm solving, and therefore what is the one solution that I see we need to explore? So for me, Mick and I spoke, we've spoken a lot off air about my project. Mick's been incredibly helpful, but he really challenges me and asks me lots of questions. One of the things we came up with was, what are people looking for when they're searching for a podcast or just searching? And we said we felt the problem was that people felt sometimes that their life was slipping by. So many opportunities, so much talent, so many things they wanted to participate in, and they had dead time, waste of time.
Well, there was actually a couple of specific questions that came from. And what I did with Sustainercast, I've taken a long time to launch this, by the way. But I mean, I've recorded 5 episodes already. But by the time I'd already recorded 5, I was like, I'm still trying to get the artwork done right. And like, it's taken me freaking 10, 12 weeks or more just to do that stuff and figured out what hosting I'm going to use and just silly, mundane stuff that's frustrating and stupid. And we'll get back to that whole conversation, I think, on starting versus waiting and what you're working on. I wanted to kind of speed that bit up because you and I took 3 months or so, and I really didn't want to go through that. I was ready to really focus on it, and I wanted to accelerate that process so that I could get into interviewing people as quickly as possible. But I found that I was ready to interview some people when I went to a trade show in Chicago, New York in January, and I bought mic equipment, I bought everything, and realized, and I've talked about this in a previous episode, and I was like, I didn't want to because I realized I had no idea what the hell I was talking to these people about.
So you tried to speed up the clarity of direction and go, right, I'm close enough. And then as a result, as soon as you moved a little way down the line, you realized you didn't have a decision-making process available.
That's correct. I had no idea. So what I was thinking was like, oh, I'm at this trade show. There's going to be all these booth vendors and there'll be all these interesting products related to energy. I'm in the world of energy and I'll do an energy podcast. And I was going to be on sustainability. That was relevant. And I was like, well, I'll just like, go out and talk to them, and then I'll see if they'll go meet me somewhere on the trade show and we'll talk and I'll record 20-30 minute episode. Well, I walked around for an entire day. I was like, there's no one here I want to interview. And then on top of that, I was like, well, but if I do, I'm just like pitching their company. They're just going to be pitching me in this. It's going to be like a 30 minute freaking commercial advertisement. I was like, oh, no one's going to want to listen to that. And I just felt uncomfortable with it. And that was when I realized that's when I was like, maybe I shouldn't do a podcast because I don't even know what the hell I'm going to talk about. Like, who am I to talk about anything other than, you know, this little industry I'm in, and I don't even feel like I'm capable to do that. But so anyway, I actually did a discovery call with Tim Reed, who has the Small Business Big Marketing podcast. And we did about an hour and a half discovery call. And it was really driven on launching a podcast because he's got a little program he's put together for that to invite people to do that with him. And I kind of knew in my gut that what we'd be talking about was what's your why rather than the mechanics of doing it. And that's precisely where the conversation went for an hour and a half. I recorded that as well. And that way I could go back and listen to it. And so he helped me workshop through some of those things. And there was a couple of key questions he asked. And the first one was like, who is your best friend, as he was saying, but who's your customer? Like, who is the person you have in your mind that has a problem that you really want to help? And then what problem are they trying to solve? That was one thing you and I talked about with, say, your podcast. With mine, with Sustainercast, the way I was workshopping it at the time was like, well, they're my clients and the people that I deal with that are too busy doing other things. They're interested and they're passionate about sustainability and saving energy and doing all these other things, but they're too busy because they're balancing the books for the school district, or they're the head of facilities for the company or whatever. They don't have time to research these things, but they've got, every time I meet them, they've got questions. Every time I get off the phone with them, they say, is there anything else I should know? What, anything that's coming up that I should know about, any new technologies and, you know, that kind of stuff. So that was my best friend, as he would say it. And the problem they were trying to solve was trying to keep up with all of these decisions and possible things they could do that there's so many of that they just get paralyzed and do nothing. And so I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could create a space where people could check in once a week and just get a dose of this kind of information so that it can stay relevant and feel like they're being informed.
And I've gone on the same journey, but if people aren't interested in podcasts right now, this is exactly the same journey for life. This is just a model for it. When you go to all those booths, they're just the same as going to some website looking for a job. There's all these opportunities. And then you walk down the street and there's all these different houses. And then you go to a social environment, there's all these different potential partners. And then there's all these different recreational activities. But unless you know, have a purpose, a decision-making process, you can't focus your energy on any of them. And what I'm actually building at the moment is an online course for this. So if this interests you, if you go to, I'll probably put it through the Risking Failure database, but also if you go to my webpage, dobbo.com.au, then you can opt in there. It's a crap webpage right now, but in a few weeks, it'll be great. And if you get there, if you listen to this after it's launched, then it's a great website. So please appreciate it. But I...
right.
Yeah. So my point is that, you know, when you went to that place, you didn't have a decision-making process, you couldn't participate properly. And this is where it's so important to know your purpose on the planet. And it's not actually that difficult. There's ways to workshop it, and Mick and I have workshopped our own stuff extensively. But, you know, essentially it comes down to, what are you wanting the reward to be for someone? And thus, they also need to have a problem. But in life, it's like, well, for me, in life, I don't understand why people don't strut. I can see people that have phenomenal talent and they're not enjoying it. And so I want people to enjoy their greatness, and that's my role. And that allows me to make so many different decisions. And then I think, all right, well, specifically when it comes to podcast, how am I going to do that? So I'll get a core purpose there as well. And then I'll go, when I'm writing my book, you know, what's the problem? And then, you know, what's the solution there? But you have one fundamental theme that you can live by. And we talked about Mick on one of the other episodes, didn't we, Mick, where I'd done that in between episode where I talked about passion and similar. And then we applied it to you and we workshopped you on air, I remember. And we came up with a 2 or 3 word statement that resonated with you as why you are doing everything you're doing. And then, so the podcast is just a smaller version of that, you know?
Right. Cause that was like creating space for clarity was how we workshopped it. And that was pretty relevant to what I had workshopped a few weeks earlier to that on this idea for a podcast. And it doesn't mean it's perfect and it's dead on, but it's just, it felt like it was close enough.
But isn't it amazing you can remember that sentence? Because when it's right, you don't forget it. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's just people, like I've run people through their core purposes for about 3 years now, and it's unbelievable that you can speak to them years later and they remember those exact words. Have they gone and actioned it and use it consistently? That's a different sort of, some people are just, they don't necessarily perceive the value, but they don't understand how they're all linked. And sometimes that's my fault. Sometimes that's their journey, but they remember it. That's the way to test whether or not you're on the right track. And I'm finding with my living a brave life, I'm remembering that language more than I'm living life slipping by, rather more than I'm remembering life slipping by. So,
you're finding the brave life is what's
living the brave life. Yeah.
Like that's sticking with you more.
Yeah. And I think it is more uplifting for people. I think that people do like that idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you and I were workshopping it, the reason that it came up, that was sort of like the problem they were trying to solve, but then it was kind of like life slipping by, but that was really like trying to build emotion around like what is genuinely the thing that, like the emotion behind the problem they're trying to solve. Cause the problem I think when you and I were bouncing it around was like, they just want to get more in touch with this or that. But in reality, it was actually a negative emotion that they were probably trying to overcome, and that's a very consistent one across the board that everybody wrestles with at some point or another. And so what we were saying was like, wow, I wonder whether that would actually be a better lead-in because...
Because since we've got a podcast...
It's so relevant.
And I think we've talked about it before, but since we've got a podcast with a negative title, we get more downloads for that podcast. That's why we talked about it. And people, public, you know, as you're listening, guys, like it's remarkable. But if we say something like, you know...
Well, when we did Stuck in a Rut, I think that had been the best...
Downloads still download. Still gets more downloads. And so Stuck in a Rut. Now, if we had called that the opposite of that, and that's not even a great episode by my measure, but if we had called the opposite of that of going, being at your best, then you just get the wank factor, entrepreneurs and I can do anything. I believe I can fly kind of crowd, which is fine, but, you know, you're battling a whole lot of other people. Like, I don't know. This is an art form to be able to get this language right so that people can recognize both the solution and the problem in just three words. And that's why when I go to companies, I actually help them work it out and they end up doing a complete rebrand around it because once you get it right, it's so powerful. As a matter of fact, a couple of my clients are trademarking their three word now. Like, they just want nobody. They're realizing how powerful it is in their industry and they don't want anybody else to be able to come and cut their mustard. Is that an expression? Cut their mustard? Steal their mustard, cut their lunch. I'm not sure, but they just don't want anybody to do it.
you should trademark cut your mustard up. I don't think anybody's going to go after that one. But
I keep cutting my mustard, but it just keeps gluing back together. So that's been the journey this week is us going on that. So I interviewed Pete Dry, who I really developed the authentic success stuff with, and that was good. That sort of fell in my lap. He's going overseas and I was talking about the podcast. I should interview you before you go away. That's great because we started Authentic Success together. So let's do that. And I tell you what happens next is that it wasn't until I started to chat to you, I realized I haven't planned my next podcast interview or I can see myself interviewing Brad probably. And then you mentioned interviewing Gary Ayres because if you're an international listener, Gary Ayres, isn't a five-time Australian or four-time Australian premiership captain and coached the perfect season at the VFL level and a few other things. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete and leader. And I just done some work for him. So he's an interesting person to talk to. But I'm realizing that if I go call Gary or others, there's a certain level of risk there. And I actually hadn't anticipated that until this discussion. I'm like, oh, wow, am I going to do that? And I feel like I want a few other things ready. And this is the dance. Like, because my webpage is not where I want it to be yet, and the public face of this is still quite ugly and not there's not a harmony in it, I feel like I just want a little bit more harmony. So I've got something to show them. I can say, look, here's the first episode, or here's how it looks. Here's how it works. And some sort of showcase.
Well, I found that too. And I've mentioned that previously on air here that I found that after I'd done two or three, like I found these other people I wanted to go interview and I couldn't because I had nothing to show them, to give them context. People that either were a stretch or people that just didn't even know me.
And
I wanted to try to get some of those people lined up in, say, my first 10 to 15. Like, it's not like I'm trying to get Al Gore or anything, but I'm just saying, like, there's some people that I would like to talk to that.
But let's talk about getting Al Gore, though, right? Let's do that. Like, did you get nervous in the stomach just then?
Okay,
good. Really. Just checking because I'm like, oh, my God, we could totally get Al Gore to be interviewed by. And I'm like, you know, obviously, you haven't really engaged with this yet as quickly as I did. But I was like, let's talk about getting Al Gore. Like, because I think that this is the same stepping stones. I'm not putting this pressure on you, Mick. You can choose. But it's the same stepping stones we're doing with the podcast applies to life. So, for example, if you want to buy a house or you want to have a particular relationship or you want a certain level of fitness or you want a certain level of career, the starting point is you need to have one fundamental resource first. And that comes down to you need to have done something well first. And if you do one thing well, then you can build on it. So if you, for example, have you want to go to the gym, if you've started walking or if you started just doing some sit-ups or some push-ups, or you've bought some, you just need to do one little thing well, and that leads the makes it a little bit easier to go to the next step. Or if you want to buy a house, rather than looking for houses, if you just go and go, I'm going to just save up this small amount of money, and you've got a little nest egg to get you started, then that creates you in the position to go to the next step. And if you've interviewed one person, that gives you the opportunity to interview the next person. So I find with my work, because I've written books now, I can just send it off to somebody and they see the book and they, you must be the real deal, and it gets me the next invitation and it creates this opening. And really that means that if you want to, say, interview Al Gore, it's a question of interviewing someone at a high level, and then because you've interviewed them, you can interview the next person at a significant level, and they're just stepping stones. But I don't know that we always appreciate that. We always just go after the big fish, like the big – everyone thinks there's going to be this one moment and I will have made it if I interview that person. And that's what happens in the podcasting industry, is that everybody's trying to interview someone who's got a huge number of followers, because then everybody will find out about me. But what Seth Godin says, he's like, no. It's not up to me to decide who's good. Like when Oprah interviews someone, the idea was that if Oprah interviewed you, everybody would hear about your book, and then you'd have an international bestseller. But Oprah wasn't going, oh, this is a great book, everybody should get it. Oh, well, no, rather she was. She's saying, this is a great book, and then she tells people about it. But if you got a crap book, she's going to read that crap book, and she's not putting you on air because the book wasn't good enough. So people think that there's going to be this breakthrough moment, but there's really not. What there is doing something really well and then taking another opportunity doing that really well. And it applies right across the board. Like it's so I didn't realize that there was a metaphor link between podcasting and life, Mick.
I knew you'd find it though.
Yeah, it always happens. How does that all sound?
It definitely resonates with me. I mean, I wonder where the project would lead me and whether I would end up talking to some people that are doing pretty significant things. I could see that happening fairly easily because of the fact that, you know, there's not that many people out there doing what I'm doing. So, you know, all you got to do is have two or three of them lined up and they all hang out in the same, you know, places, so to speak. They're at the same conventions, headlining the same type of stuff. So they kind of brush shoulders with each other and, you know, they seem to, you know, people at the top tend to know who else is there, sort of thing. So, but that's not really what I'm trying to do anyway. And I kind of feel like that is important because I don't have this connection to that. I genuinely don't feel like I have a need to do that. That's not why I'm doing it. And this is what Tim Reed was really good about. Like he was like, your goal should just to try to be helpful. And if you're being helpful, everything else will fall into place, sort of thing. And, you know, not try to push things and like force things, but just try to be a resource for whoever it is that you're connecting with, be it your audience or the people you're interviewing. And I don't know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Maybe they'll get to a point where, you know, it becomes a lot more serious. But at this point, it's just a hobby still. I mean, it's related to what I do in my industry, but it's not that... It's not that heavily related. I'm not like dependent on it. I'm just genuinely interested in it. And I think what else is relevant is I'm starting it because I've been looking for a podcast on this subject. So
I think it's interesting when you say like the old Gore's a good example because when you say, yeah, but that's not really what I want to do. This is the seduction of life too, is someone else throws out an idea. Oh yeah, you could do that. And you could, but then we go back to our decision-making process and you go, well, really your goal is to help create a space for people to have more clarity around this information, the energy efficiency industry. And if interviewing Al Gore would help do that, then you've driven to do it. But if it's not, then you go, well, that's just it's a fool's gold. It's like a, you know, a sparkly distraction.
Mm.
And that's really, because you go back to your core purpose. You go, well, if it would significantly help you, if you thought you could supercharge the reason you built the thing, then you would do it, right?
Mm. I think I would, but you'd work towards that for sure.
And then you'd work towards it. But I think we do this with like trying to buy a house as well. Like it's the, someone goes, oh, you know what? You should really buy in this area. That area is going really good. Or that's got a great house for, you know, your kids. And everyone will give you their ideas. But it's not until you know your own values and what you're trying to do that you can comfortably say no to the distractions. And that's why you and I put so much time into working out exactly who are we trying to reach? What problem are we trying to solve? And to then not get distracted.
I think there is something, however, that there are a couple of people I'll say that I've identified in the process that I'm like, oh, I really want to talk to that person. There's two people that I consider to be like really, they would be like monumental interviews for me to do. And a couple of people have already mentioned one, like the same person to me more than once. Oh, you should interview this. And I was more like, I'm not ready yet. And I was trying to pay attention to whether that was a confidence thing or it was like genuinely is like, no, I don't want to like bring somebody in that could be really, really a supercharged interview. And like, I actually don't have my chops on enough to be able to like really take advantage of that. Not for me, but just like,
you know, the timing's not right. You're not ready. Yeah. You don't, cause you go, yeah, you're still trying to work out how to do the recording stuff, you know, like.
Right. And yeah. This came up with Tim Ferriss in his most recent interview. He interviewed a guy that has a podcast on his history. And I don't know if you've heard this fast. It's awesome. Anyway, so this guy does 3 to 4 hour long podcasts on one particular history topic. And he'll do 4 to 5 part series on like World War II or whatever. And he like just digs in super deep, super passionate about it. And in any case, there was this one particular topic and Tim was like, that was one of your best like ones. And he was like, well, as a matter of fact, he was like, I held on to that. I've been doing this for whatever, 3 or 4 years. And if ever since I started, I've wanted to do that topic, but I just didn't feel like I was able to do it justice yet. Like I always said to myself, I'm not doing that until like I can feel completely satisfied that I'm going to nail it because it's too important and it's too big and it's the most incredible story. And if I screwed it up, I'd never forgive myself. And I could relate to that in some way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you try to pursue a particular path and you do have people that are like, oh, I should do this, should do that. And I think it is okay to sometimes be, and I had to verbalize that to people sometimes because I've had that within my own work and I've had it within relationships and things like that too, of people saying you should do this, you should do that. And sometimes you feel lame by saying, well, I'll get to that. And you feel that sort of forcefulness of like, why aren't you hiring more people? Or why aren't you, you know, doing more music or whatever it is that it's like, well, I will, but I just like right now, I'm not ready for that. Like that would bring too much other stuff out of balance or I'm not sharp enough for it yet.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, haven't we? The idea that like we even talked about it, was it last week or the week before, about the timing thing, like that you know, a seed takes a certain period of time to grow into a tree and then create fruit. And sometimes it's just not sure if we did in the Mojo episode that didn't go to air or the other one, but we were just talking about basically the whole idea that there's natural timelines of things. Things just need to play out. And we were talking about, when with Ian Pope, you know, I had his business card next to my bed for so long. And not sort of from like a lover's phone number, but which is where I kept my business cards that I collected. But it was there for so long. And, you know, you proposed the question, I go, why did you take so long to call him? And I'm like, well, it just wasn't time. You know, like it wasn't like I'm being weak or I'm being fearful. It just wasn't time. I just felt in my gut. But there's other times when it is time and you've got to take that risk. And that's what I'm starting to think about the stuff with, say, interviewing Gary Ayres and giving him a call, which I can give him a call. It's not a problem. Like he'd happily take my call and I'm sure he'd happily allocate the time to me. Like that's not the issue.
I think as you redirect your brain to mechanics of like website and stuff like that, like I think you'd probably be surprised at just how little amount of work you need to do to be able to get that respectable. I mean, if you went to sustainacast.com right now, it's not brilliant. It's not the best thing ever. It's no different to our website when we started, but it's there. And
yeah, but that's not quite where I'm at. What I'm at is I have a lot of knowledge that I've collected that I want to put online as e-courses that so that people can get incredible value for a small amount of money. I really want to do that. So I still can get a little trickle of income from it, but I really want to deliver this stuff. So I want to get the website ready to do that. I want to put a whole lot of stuff up so that I can have these courses And then if people love my podcast, then they can buy a relevant course, and that trickle of money pays for me doing the podcast. So I feel like I need-
What does that have to do with-
Well, because until that infrastructure is in place, these other interviews, they dilute my focus, and I feel like I can just do those interviews. I'll do those interviews in, say, September, October. Like, I'll just do them a bit later in the year. I just need to get a few other things in place first. So, I feel comfortable with that timeline. I don't feel like I'm not doing it. But what I did start to think about was, like, once that stuff's in place, once I've built a couple of courses and I can make sure that the whole system has a business model that works, once I've done that, then I got excited because I'm like, well, once it's time to interview people, this could escalate quickly. Because if I get brave enough, I have a network of sufficient enough that knows another network that knows another network. Like, it wouldn't take long. But I want to put everything in place before I do that. So, I'm excited and nervous about eventually doing those interviews. But right now, it's just not quite right.
We said something, and I think it might have been the Mojo episode, and I think it's worth bringing up here. Because I am not the person that should be, like, trumpeting this, because I'm guilty as hell of it in terms of waiting too long. But it was a statement that if you're not embarrassed by the first episode or the first piece of art or the first iteration of your product, if you're not embarrassed by that, then you've waited too long. I feel like I've waited too long already with my own project, but it wasn't actually because of so much of a fear as it was, like, I just felt like I needed to get some of that branding and things like that right. And I'd already created the content and I'd had time to kind of listen back to the content and tweak it and perfect it and do more and more stuff with it. And then I was like, oh, screw it. It's done. Just, I'm not going to fiddle around with that anymore. But it did take a very long time to just, like, get it over the line, almost to the point of embarrassment with my friend Marty, who I connect with quite a lot. And he's like, have you launched the cast yet? No, I'm having problems with this. I'm having problems with that. And it just got, you know, even today, he's like, dude, just go launch it already. I'm sick of this, you know? And I knew that. I was creating reasons why it couldn't be done. The truth is it could, and I could always sidestep all of those issues, but I was continually making up reasons of, like, oh, but I just don't know if that's the place I want to host it. That might not be the best place. And if I started there and it's all too late, then I can't change this and that. And I don't want to start the wrong way. And, you know, somebody needs to step in and go, just, you need to start. And at the same time with what you're talking about, though, and we talk about this many times, and you're actually pretty good at holding your ground on it, but I feel, if it was me, I feel like there's a much greater risk to putting in, say, 2 to 3 months of work building courses and finding that my audience doesn't actually want that. They came for something different.
Yeah, but I see that, and there is a huge amount of risk in that. So, what I'm actually doing is I've just gotten clear on the what I want to solve and what the solution is. And I'm going to post it as an opportunity for people to buy at half the rate. And I'm going to leave that window open for 48 hours. And if nobody buys, then I go, of my established network, then I'm like, well, I've missed the mark.
Okay, so you're going to test it with your existing...
So, I'm going to test it again and make sure... So I'm not... I am building those courses, but I'm still so... There is a process that needs to be taken, because, you know, it's interesting when you say, you know, if you're not embarrassed. I'm like, mate, I'm so freaking embarrassed about most of the work that I've got in public because I've rushed it. I've always just started. I'm like, there's typos in that book. That bit doesn't stack up. Now that I know more, I would have put it like this. That doesn't match this. And so I'm at a different point where I'm going, no, I'm deleting my entire backlog and doing it again. And so, my feeling is not that that I've taken too long to start. I do feel like I've started. I feel like I'm now taking too long in the process. That's annoying me, that things aren't moving swifter. So, and if I look, and if I, yeah, it's a different problem. But if I look at why that's happening, one of the things that I'm missing, it's an area that I'm not strong, is I need an editor. I need a freaking awesome editor. They need to have an opinion. They need to get the way I write. They need to understand some of this stuff. They need to understand the people that I want selling it to. I don't want them to change it. I want them to make my text better. And I want them to spell check the hell out of it and look at the English to make sure it's right. And I want them to be pretty on call in that I can send something and go, can we have this done in a week? And I don't have that right now. So I'm going over my own texts over and over and over. And it's tearing me a new asshole. Like Kate needs this PDF. So I've written a book on goal setting, and it's a completely radical different view of the whole game. It's totally different. Everyone else regurgitates the same old crap. I've got a different model. I've written it. I've been sitting on this book for over a year, and I'm going to release it for free as a PDF. So what's going to happen is when people go to my webpage, they can just, you know, give us your email. We'll post it to you. All right. So one, I get to know who is interested, and I can keep people interested in all my what I'm doing, and I can send them the podcast and everything. But they'll get this book for free, and I'll have a video that it goes with it. This text needs to be laid out as an ebook. It needs to be. Now, she needs the accurate text to do that. And that is slowing down the process because this is so difficult for me. But that's one job. I've also got to do this old video. Like, it's once people see when this thing's live, people are going to go, yeah, that would have been quite difficult. How did you get all those people to do those interviews for you? I know, shit, it took me forever because they're all around the world, these people that I'm interviewing. You know, like, it's big. But that's what I feel like the process has taken too freaking long.
You'll laugh at this because it was talked about in Tim Ferriss's recent episode that I've referenced earlier, talking to this guy on this history, because he spends so much time. It's like a documentary, essentially, that he's creating in each episode. It's epic. And anyway, it's called Hardcore History, by the way. They gave this example of writing and talking about how the guy was saying, you know, I get so frustrated. And I used to get so frustrated because I would sit down and I'd dedicate myself to writing and I would crank out, like, at the end of the week, like, I'd set a goal of like, okay, I'm going to do like 3,000 words a day. And I'd get that done and I'd get to the end of the week and then I'd start editing and I'd cut it all down to like 1,000. And he was like, and then I get to the end of the week and I'd look at that production of like 1,000 words and go, that's all I got achieved this week. I feel like crap now. And so they were just talking about how, like, we don't give enough. Sometimes, though, all those things need to happen in order to get to that little nugget.
Exactly, yeah.
And we don't give that enough attention or space, or, like, we're just not kind enough to ourselves on those things, because it's like, I get what you're saying. Like, I understand. And we've talked about this too before off air, how everybody says to start. But I've never heard an entrepreneur, like a successful artist or creator of something saying, they're always saying, I wish I had started earlier. Like, I wish I had launched it sooner. I wish I hadn't waited as long as I did.
Do you think they're saying that?
No. Well, a lot of them are. But what I'm saying is, like, they're all doing the same thing. So it's like, that's what it takes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like none of them are saying, well, that was never a problem for me. I just started making it. It was just all brilliant and it all just worked. Like, they all identify with this. Either it's a fear or a perfectionism thing or something that they wrestled through with. In hindsight, they would do so much faster now and they wish they hadn't waited because all these opportunities came from it. But they're wrestling through it, and that's what it takes.
That's the process. Sometimes, yeah.
The common logic in so many of these discussions and interviews and talking to people is like the advice they give is just like, just don't wait, get going. And I do agree with that, but I also believe that we need to give recognition to the fact that there's a lot of mundane stuff that we have to go through to
in sort the process.
Of find that resolution. And that's not lost time, even though it feels like it. And I've been punishing myself for the past 6 to 8 weeks on just these types of things. And, you know, eventually you just get it done and you move on. But
and then once you've done it, it just goes to the back of a to-do list that's been ticked off and you've got a new challenge. It's like it's just a never-ending.
Well, you get it. And then you like the moment it's done and you get that relief, you go, well, that was dumb that I waited that long.
Because something that people may not, you know, because they don't have the complexity of, you know, they just hear this, our conversation that we have. But, like, before I got on air to you, I was talking to James, and James is helping me structure the back end so that I can deliver the free study content that I've been giving away, and so that you can send out your email, and people can do that if they actually, if you want to. It's called yourstudycoach.com.au, and you just log in, then we've got some videos sent out. So he's helping me build that. He's also helped me build out the whole how do we create the site, the online products and the like. And he would keep coming up with some A, Bs and Cs, and I would take the philosophy like, James, I don't need to get it perfect. I'm going to get this thing up live, and then I'm just going to go, and which is what's happened with yourstudycoach.com.au. It's like, when I've got on there, it's just up. Is it perfect? No. I think it's actually pretty ugly, but it's up and it's existing, and it's just, and now it's live and I can fix it. There's other things, though, that I don't take that process. For example, this book on goals, I've given it to quite a few people for them to read, and usually after the first six pages, I'll get a text from someone saying, this thing is freaking incredible, which feels awesome. But then what happens for the other 20 pages? You know, and I'm like, why not? So I've been really chipping away at that. And then yesterday I spoke to Brona about it, and she'd read, I said, oh, how much did you read? I knew you read the first six pages. She goes, no, I read it all. She goes, I loved it. And I was like, huh, really? And then I asked, so did you do it? She said, no. So we discussed why that was the case. And then what I learned was that, well, if I'm going to release this information, I probably also, separate to whether the book commands people take action, they still want to be involved in the community. So if she knew that there was a course that she could rock up for a couple of hours and workshop it with a few people, she'd be more likely to do that. It's like people don't do sit-ups at home, but they go to the gym to do sit-ups. And I was like, oh, so therefore this course needs to be designed like that. So there's an element where I'm like, no, I want to produce quality in this because I want it to work. And I want to make sure when people do one of my courses, it absolutely works. And there's other things like, no, just get the thing bloody live. And so there's like a time for both. But I do, like, there are some times when I've taken too long, but I don't, and I'm annoyed at myself, but often it's, you know, I'm confused. I'm out of my area. I'm out of my skill set. I don't know. That's why it's been so good hanging out with you, because you've been solving a lot of problems for me. And you just go, oh, I've done like A, B, and C. I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I would never have known how to work that stuff out. And I'm frozen because I don't have that relationship with people who can help me. Like that editor. Like, if someone is listening to this and you know someone who has a passion for editing and you think they might be a match, please get in contact. Like, desperately, please. But understand that I may say no, because I might have them look at my work and I'm like, okay, look, it's not a match. Have a look at it. But I need someone who is a gun, desperately. Don't know if I emphasize the word desperately enough. And I've got family and friends that all help out and stuff, but if I want to churn, I've got about six or seven books here that I've ready to go, but they just need a critical eye to go over them. Yeah, and that takes forever.
So, yeah. Well, one of the things I'm working on with my own company is trying to potentially develop like a product or a solution of some type, and have a community of people that I could bounce that off of, like literally build a sales page, so to speak, advertise it, and just get 50 to 100 people that have shown interest in what I've said. Just like what you mentioned earlier, it's like a landing page that people just go, yes, this is of interest to me. And then finding out why, what is it you need? Here's what we're thinking. Would that work? No, yes. Like, here's a video showing what we're going to do with that the following week, and evolving that process and making it a fluid, dynamic process. That it seems to me, in some ways, if you were doing the podcast, you'd have a community to help you do that. Meaning you could send them chapters, you could send them one-page documents, you could send, like, you could say, tell me what you think of this. Like, does this, do you know what I mean?
Like, well, I'll tell you what, like, yeah, I do that. We could do that with this listener base right now. I'd be happy to post something out to everybody. But then when is it, this becomes an internet, you know, everyone just forwards it around. And I don't mind if you don't get, I don't mind if people get it for free and I don't get any acknowledgement of the process. That's fine. My concern is when my name is on it and it's not finished and it's not good, and then it gets circulated around, I'm like, ah, it's not my, oh.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So So, like, it was interesting to listen to Neil Strauss. I think his name. He's written 7 best-selling books, and you might have heard him interviewed on Tim Ferriss's podcast. He, when he gets people to proofread his stuff, he has them come round to his house, read as much as they can while they're there, and then leave. No document is allowed to leave the house. This is top secret. And I have emailed quite a few people a copy of this goals book, and I've put the words all over it. You know, this is Sean's copy, Mick's copy, you know, all over it, so that if it ever gets forwarded on, I'll know which bastard that he broke my privacy request. but, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting you necessarily put the book out. I'm more talking about, like, bits of a book, like a half of a page, and, like, is this a good concept or not? I don't know. That's a good one.
I'll actually test that. I'll write up a little document and run it by our risking failure database and see what people think. Look, I hear you, but it's just a web. They all fit together. So, you know, we say, well, if you drove, did the podcast, like, well, I have actually worked it out, and I have actually built the back end, and I have actually done the first interview. It's not like it's not happening. It's just I'll interview Brad when the opportunity comes up. I'll interview Ryan. I'll probably interview, you know, someone like Monique, if you're listening. You know, that'll be a great interview because she's got a great backstory. But then, I mean, those other risk ones, those ones which are a bit outside the network, or I just want to really nail because I don't have that same level of rapport, I can see myself just doing those later. And also, what do you think? I don't want to release every week. I just don't think I could do that. Do you think I can release every second week or something? What do you think?
I've been a little bit nervous about it, but I've decided in the same way that we did with this. Originally, when I pitched this idea to you, I said, I'm willing to do, I think I said 10 episodes. That was like 10 weeks. I said every week for 10 weeks, I'm willing to do the first 10 and then we'll reassess whether we'll keep going or not. For this, I've kind of committed to doing, I don't know why the number 30 is in my mind. It's like, I'm just going to keep going every week for 30 weeks because I just sort of feel like if I do too spread out, it's just not going to gain the kind of traction that it could possibly do. And I also think I just know myself well enough that if I start spreading it out too much, then I just won't do it. It'll become too easy to, whereas, you know, we miss uploading by a day or two or three on this, but I don't like, we don't forget to connect. I don't forget to upload for like 2 weeks. And that routine is really helpful to me. And that accountability, I think it doesn't feel like a chore. And to me, that was like my way of figuring out whether this is a chore or not. Cause I do feel like it's important to get to know, meaning as in to get to the word know as quickly as possible in the sales process, in whatever process you're in. I know that everybody is always talking about getting to yes, but I think it's more valuable to get to know much quicker so you can move on. Cause I don't want to put 30 episodes in over 3 years and find out this is not really what I want to be doing or this not. Like, I just assume go really committed because I've gotten this far and feel like it's a good idea. And I want to give it enough time to evolve, but also, like we've said before, have a stopping point and say, I'm not going to do it forever if, you know, there's a point where I'm going to stop and assess so that I don't spend the rest of, you know, the next 5 years trying to bang on about something that's really nobody's interested in.
Yeah, I think we talked about that another week where someone said to me, you know, some of the things you've done have really defined you. And I said, no, it wasn't that. It was the things that I actually didn't do.
You said that in that episode.
I said that in the podcast you just listened to, but I think you and I talked about it too. It just came up recently. I realized that it's aligned with what you're saying there. It's actually the stuff that you don't do. And it's like with these podcasts, it's the stuff that we don't put in that actually, we've had a few people come in, but they've been our friends into this. So we've basically got a circle of friends that this podcast is about, where the other stuff we're both doing, it's a different network because it's got a different, you know, so I wouldn't interview my friends necessarily. I would interview people of a particular interest. So the no is so important. I like what you said. Hey, I've got another question. It's a bit of a business work question. And so for the people listening, usually what happens is before and after we do one of these podcasts, Mick and I just, we spend another hour or two talking about a whole lot of other stuff. So what we sort of decided today was just to have that conversation we normally have, but just press record. So if you're done now, it's totally fine. But I've got a question for you, Mick. So with this, the online products that we're designing, I was talking to James about what they're actually going to be called and how to market it, what the problem is and what the problem is and how to solve it. And mm-hmm. I've got some notes here. People can hear me flipping pages. So what we really recognize is that, and I've known this from when I was really young, consistently I've had the same sort of customer and also just person who wants some help. I can hear you writing something down with with the biggest pencil in the world. Yeah, that's fine. That's okay. You can do that. You should see this piece of paper. It's giant. So typically the customer has always been someone who feels like they could be doing a lot more. Like either with their talent with their talent is one way to language it, but they feel like they could be doing more. They want to be doing more. There's a little bit of either fear in them for not moving into something, or there's a frustration because they haven't been able to, or they just want to go big and they just don't know how. And that's fundamentally been it. And then the outcome is that where they'd eventually, you know, they've got that question, they've got that frustration, they've got that. And what I would be doing is going, well, and help them actually get that. Okay. So it's literally a case of, I want to be able to do something. I feel like I'm capable of more. I want to be able to have that outcome. And me basically designing a course that says, well, if you want to be able to do that, this is how I would get you to do that. This is the content. Is that problem solution still sounds a bit gray there, doesn't it? But what do you think of that initially? Because I've got another question.
It reminded me of when we workshopped that the reason Life Slipping Away came, the question that was behind Life Slipping Away was like, what are they anxious about? Like, and I know that I'm just like bringing more kind of stuff, rounding what you just said, but is your question related to like, does that sound like the right problem and question? I think it does.
I think it's very close. I think I've got to language it better. But
yeah, I mean, it's not the three words, but it's damn close.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that was good. So then came the question of the three words, really, although it's not really three words, just to be accurate for people listening. Three words would be your core purpose. And there is a core purpose behind this, and I can language it better. But now I'm looking at marketing. Marketing is different to core purpose. Marketing is telling the story so you can explain it to someone. So I don't say to people, enjoy your greatness. That's not all over my webpage because you'll just look like a wanker. So I've got another one thing that makes me look like a wanker.
Enjoy your brilliance.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So on there, on the new webpage, it's actually going to say, for when you're pretty good, but you want to be effing awesome. And mm-hmm. And that's what this course would be about, these online courses. It's going to be one primary one and then a whole lot of spin-offs that, you know, that's what I want to build over the rest of the remaining period of my life, is just to keep building these online courses and texts. What I really want to do, though, I want to create a title for this online learning platform or for this course that people are really drawn towards. They're proud of it. So that if they had, say, a brochure for it, or they had a book with that title on their coffee table at their home, they wouldn't mind if their friends came and saw it. Because nobody wants to have a book. Like with Back Off Bully, if you're reading that, people go, are you getting picked on? That's the first question. So I wrote that for the reason I wrote it, and et cetera. And if you go, you know, how to be an elite individual, yeah, but almost suggests that you're not an elite individual. So that's what I was trying to work on today with James a little bit. We brainstormed a little bit and I came up with some bits of language. He liked performance mastermind, or that word mastermind. We talked about calling it the Elite Academy, but elite's not really very me. I'm much more
the word elite.
No. But then we had talked about real world success, real world results. And then it was time to come talk to you. So we didn't really close this off. So when I'm pitching this and people are hearing this discussion, this is really raw knowledge. So there's a good chance that when you're hearing it, you're cringing or you're going, I want you to call it that. Like, that's exactly, we're mid-process right now. So sometimes people judge you on when you're mid-process. So I'm openly saying to everybody, this is very mid-process. But what I'm trying to do is work out not what I'm trying to sell so I can package it and manipulate. I'm going to go, what is it that I deliver? That's what we're trying to work out here. It's like, it's about a level of accuracy. So that's what I'm trying to do, because I'm trying to go, what's this thing? So the other language I've got is supercharged, the word supercharged, like supercharged performance. But I don't know, if you had a book on a coffee table that said supercharged performance, you know, that'd be a little bit more attractive. Like, it's the sort of thing you want to be proud of. Like, if you say to your friend, oh, I've signed up to the gym down the corner, you know, the gym, there's something about that that's okay. It's, if you've gone and hired a financial planner, people presume that you're doing okay. But if you're reading a book on getting out of debt, then they're presuming you're not doing okay. So I want to get that balance right. It's a little bit the same as the life slipping by versus living bravely.
I still, to me, quite honestly, it just comes back to, like, your audience is going to tell you what it should be called.
Yeah.
Well, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just,
right. Well, they're not in this call, are they? Where are they, Mick? How's that going to work? I'm not sure if you understand podcasts. Like,
I just think that's the value of the podcast. I really do. Everyone.
Yeah, but then I've got to...
No, you're not going to ask everyone. I'm not saying, like, I'm just saying, like, you're finding out what... I don't know, maybe you get flooded with emails already with questions, but it's like, it's... I don't know. I don't think you should worry about what looks good on the coffee table. I think you should just, like, have the book be the answer to the question that you most commonly get.
Yeah, but see, that just does my friggin' head in when you say that, because that's exactly what I'm saying before. I'm like, people go, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm like, it does fucking matter, because I've got to produce some artwork I've got to post it and say, hey, the course is going to be called this. It's going to cost this much money. If you want it to be one of the first, you know, if you buy it in the next 48 hours, then you can have it at this price. And to write that email, to write that offer, to test it, I need some words. So when you go, oh, they'll tell you, I'm like, I have to write something for them to tell me. But do you know what I mean?
I think it's just probably the approach to the business model in some ways. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't get why you need to build the content before you build the community.
I'm not building. I've got the content. It took me 20 years. It's established.
I know, but I guess I'm just sort of like, I know you need to get to it, but I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe it is best to just keep workshopping the titles. I can't tell you, like, because I don't know. Like, I don't know what the best title is for.
No,
that.
But I just, like, wanted your opinion, which I'm getting. No, but I'm like we've worked on this title stuff before, and because when you say build a community, I'm like, it's not that I'm not. Like, I've got landing pages everywhere. I'm building that community. That community has been built over 20 years. There's all these people that came on my spy programs. There's all these people that have been on my every time I walk down the street, every time I go in the city or something, somebody recognizes me and says, hey, you know, I remember you taught me this. Like, it's pretty humbling. It's cool. So they're already out there. What I've got to do is just go, hey guys, I've packaged my content into this course. It's called ...
Well, what if you did something like, if you're going to use the brand thing of, like, from pretty good to effing awesome, like, what if you just continued with that and said, like, what the F do you want to do with your life, or, like, for goal setting, and what do you effing care about for values or something like that? I don't know. Like, to just carry your – what if you, like, carried your branding through?
I knew you had it in you. I knew you did. Because as before, when you were I was like, that's because I'd mentioned that to James too. That's, I reckon there's some strength there. That's great. You see, that's helpful. I can really do that.
Scrape to the bottom of the barrel. Like.
No, but it's great though. Like, that gives me something to work with. At least I can put that in an email. I can't write an email going, we don't know what it's called, you decide. I can't do that. I think it's going to be calling getting effing awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see you doing that. Like, what do you effing care about? And like,
jeez, that's really cool. That's really cool. All the schools I go to are going to be wrapped with this.
I don't think you can say F, and I think you just have to come out and like say it when you're at the schools, like really like shock and awe, you know.
Oh, I got told off for that. I actually did a talk recently, a couple of years ago, and they said, listen, really excited for you to talk today. I just whispered to me, but could you please not say the word fuck? I said, what? And they go, oh, some people have just said that you drop, you know, you say fuck. And I'm like, and I did once, like 10 years ago, and it was really deliberate. Or maybe twice. But anyway, I was like, geez. I said, oh, no, that's all right. I won't say that. Like, but I was, you know, I was shocked. And then with another time, I went to a school and all these kids walked in. They were a gang of, I'm not sure that was Maori or Samoan or something. And they were very intimidating, big, big kids. They were probably year 11 or 12. And they clearly ran the place. And they all walked in. I had these kids for a couple of hours. And the principal came over and said hello. And I said, hey, listen, mate. I said, listen, I'm comfortable doing this presentation. I said, but, you know, I can see those kids could be a little bit tricky. I said, do you mind if I'm a little bit cheeky with my language? Meaning that I was going to say, you know, dick or wanker, you know. And he goes, mate, if you can control those kids, you can say whatever the fuck you want. So I did the presentation.
It's probably the best one you've ever done.
No, I did the presentation. I didn't drop the F-bomb or anything. Didn't need to, but I did take it to these kids and I did challenge them and just called them out and stuff because they're just unruly and, you know, there's ways to do that. And I just slowly brought them into line and challenged them but then didn't get in a fight with them anyway. And at the end, I was, you know, everyone's leaving and there's kids, people come up saying goodbye. And then anyway, they all walked up from this big gang of kids. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Here we go. And they all stuck out their hand and they're like, thanks, man. That was really good. That was the best presentation I've ever heard, man. That was awesome, man. Thank you. And like, they were all just, every one of them loved it. And the teachers were so annoyed because I'd given these kids hell. But they just had wanted that strong hand that was fair.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah. So I wonder if I did put on my marketing.
Yeah. We talked about this last week off air a little bit about profanity and how not intentional, but just sometimes
it's the right words.
Wondering whether sometimes there's some authenticity to it. Like, I don't know. I don't like to be suggestive on that, but just, that's why it gets through to them in some ways, because you're not trying to be somebody you're not. You're just being Dobbo when I'm here and you're being a wanker, so straighten up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is the right word for it. This is how I talk to my friends.
Yeah,
you know, right. Like, not that I call them up. You know, actually, I wouldn't use the F word at my friends, but I might if I say to kids, if you're running real fast and you run into a tree, it's okay to drop the F-bomb. Like, if you're just asking me to pass a sandwich, you probably don't need it. So there's a space for it. And some research came out recently. Somebody handed it to me that was saying that, you know, the people that swear are actually typically more trustworthy. Whether you get somebody who had a significant conversation with it. It might have been Sarah. Anyway, and I think it's interesting. And also, if anybody asks, you know, it's completely inappropriate because I'm writing F and I'll be like, no, it stands for frigging. I don't know what you're talking about. But I like this idea about what do you effing care about? Or, you know, what's your effing purpose? What do you want to effing achieve? Jeez, that's pretty cheeky.
Why not?
Hey, if there's any listeners listening, we'd love the feedback, actually. I would. I'd love it. Can you email us? How do I email us, Mick?
Just they go dobbo@riskingfailure.com.
dobbo@riskingfailure.com. Okay, that's how to email me.
You got to get the subject title right, though. In your subject line, you got to make sure it says, here's my effing feedback.
How good's that? And all friends and family, you know, you can give me some feedback too. Except mum and dad, I pretty already much know what you think, I think, on this one. I'll be like, oh, Mark, you're not doing that. Oh, do you think you have to say that? I'm like, yeah, just take a risk. No one else does it, especially in the personal development industry. No one does that sort of stuff. Everybody's trying to be this cookie cutter, plastic. I've got a little microphone by the side of my cheek. I'm wearing my jacket with my high collar. And I got a big crowd and I look like Anthony Robbins. And you're like, oh, take a chill pill, dick. Like, it's not actually how the game works. It's not life. It's an image. So I just want to be more. Well, they can do that. That's fine. But it's just not me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. That's really helpful, Mick. I'll run it by James. He'll probably tell me it was a dumb idea, but I'm feeling good about it at the moment. And I think people need to know, too, that these things evolve like that. Like, yeah, it really took you and I for us to come up with that language for the podcast, for my podcast. That took us about 2 months, didn't it? And then we had a tipping point.
Yeah. Yeah, when you were talking and bouncing it around, that was for sure. Yeah, and it's intimidating to ask people that stuff. Oh, man. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Like to throw ideas out there that are just being, we've talked about this many times, but you're just workshopping and it's rough.
It is rough. That's why, like, having a conversation like this publicly, it's like, well, this is the way the process works, people. Like you don't know. You spend a lot of your time uncertain and then you make a call on it. And it was interesting before when you were talking about, oh, Mark, build the community and stuff first. That's why I was like, what are you talking about, Mick? In that, not that you were right or wrong, but we've had so many discussions brainstorming titles and language. I knew that you had the nature for it because we've done it so often. Mm. And people haven't been involved in those conversations. So that's why I pushed you. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I was like, because I know that we've done it. We always have these conversations.
In your first episode that you sent me, you guys talked a little bit about paying attention to what you love doing and what you don't love doing. I've asked you this before, but is it a chore for you to write books or is it more of just a chore to edit them?
It's definitely a chore to edit. Writing's very difficult. It's very time consuming, especially when you see how I type. Did I tell you that? I may have said this story on air, but one day I was at Interlochen typing downstairs, all those people, you know, Danny and others, the listeners that work there, downstairs in that little space at the bottom of this spiral wooden staircase. And I'm riding away and someone walks past and goes, Dobbo, you've written books, haven't you? And I go, yeah. He goes, fuck, you're way more dedicated than I realised. Just walk past because he saw how I was typing.
You were doing the little digit, the little like single digit.
Yeah, and I still do. Look,
I've seen you on stage. I've heard you in audio. I've like all of that. And I anything you would do, I would always consume if it's in audio or on a stage. And I'm not saying I wouldn't in audio in a book format, but for me, it's like, I don't need the book. Like, I want to hear you or I want to see you tell me about goals. Because when I read you, it's not the same.
No, well, those
the content is solid, but
yeah. Although people, when they read Rise Above, they say, "Oh my god, it's like you're talking to me." If they've heard me present, like I write the same way I present, typically. But on the most recent stuff, I've sort of gone for not a different style, but I've been really conscious about what I'm writing. So if I go back to your question, writing helps you develop the clarity around your content, and you become a better presenter for having written. I find, because you really have held accountable to simplifying an idea down to a few words, where when you're presenting, you can waffle around the place and get away with it. But what I'm planning on doing is that with this goal setting book, the idea is that there's a video that goes with all of my content now. So anytime I write, some people just love the written stuff. They just want it. Like, for example, I'm buying audiobooks at the moment. Once a month, I have at least one audiobook. And then after I love it, I end up buying it on Amazon anyway, because there's certain sections I want to actually sit and look through. So what I'm planning on doing is writing, and I've actually written some stuff that just needs to be developed a bit more, but writing it and then doing a video or audio that accompanies it every time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I'm thinking. Because when you ask me, it's a good question, because really the question is for all of us on the planet, what's your medium? If you do have a core purpose, so if we use my one to enjoy your greatness, then you've got to go, well, what's the medium? How do you do that? Well, the presenting is what I'm strongest at, but you can't always do that. So then you have subsidiaries like the writing and the likes. But other people go, well, if their core purpose is to have people feel connected in the outdoors, then, you know, they've got a different medium. It could be a national park, or it could be skiing, or it could be the local park, or it could be in a garden. You know, and there's a medium that makes sense to them. So you're right. I feel like this podcasting and audio video stuff is really me finally finding my medium.
Gary Vaynerchuk, I heard when he wrote his book, he just recorded it and had it transcribed, and then somebody else took all of that content and edited it down into a book. So he didn't even.
Because he had a bloody good editor, didn't he? He had an editor that could do it.
Well, if you had a transcriber, though, then the person is just transcribing all of that 10,000 words, and then the editor helps turn that into 5,000, you know?
I haven't had success in that when I've recorded. I've
not
tried
it. You should. I thought that was interesting. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Because one of a friend of a friend, she did a weekend course where you work on all the chapters and you just record them. They record them and then somebody else types them up for you. They charge you 10 grand and then I think you walk away with 100 copies of your very first book. And I was like, really? Because having written books, I find that's not really, that process is too fast. And because the idea can't really mature. And then because this course was all about positioning yourself as an authority and having a book about it. And in the process, I was realizing, oh, yeah, because we're writing a book, it doesn't mean it's a good one. Like, yeah, you can produce that amount of text in a couple of days. I find that when I've spoken, I still have to, if I was going to have it recorded for a book, I'd still have to have such clarity that there was some harmony and order in what was coming out of my mouth so that the person at the other end didn't have to dissect it. I'd have to have...
Yeah, you'd have to have a brilliant editor.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, this has been a bit epic.
Yeah.
An hour and 20 plus by my measure.
Yeah.
But this is how we normally hang out. But this is what we often talk about off air. It's been pretty sincere, hasn't it? What do you think? What are you laughing at?
I think so. It's pretty close to the reality of what goes on.
Yeah, a little baby crying in the background, Liz coming in saying goodnight, all that sort of stuff. We have some, and also the searching, like just going, oh, what about this? What about that? Like it's pretty common that you and I get on air or off air and just sort of bounce each other's challenges off each other. And it's helpful. And that's what Mick and I have talked about before, is that the reason we do this, like we'll keep doing these podcasts because our personal value, the personal value for hanging out on a weekly basis is just, it's too extraordinary. It's too valuable. Besides the podcast is like a spin-off little byproduct of it. This is not where the value is. There's more value off air than on air. Sorry, guys. You're special too. Oh, that's good, mate. Well, thank you. Thank you, listeners. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Chris, editor. It's been great. You'd like to thank all the people that supported it, my sponsors. It's been just great. All right, we finished.
Get back to writing your effing book.
Yeah. And all those people that you know, listen to us when you do that drive to work and you know that, you know, our 30 or 40-minute ones are the perfect duration and this one's an hour and 20. We just gave you a week's worth of audio. You're welcome. Enjoy your effing drive.
See you, everybody.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.